kids and you get introduced to them.
Yes.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome to the Portland City Council. Before we begin the official proceedings, a couple things to take care of. First is that each week we have young people come in and talk to us about issues that are important to them. And it's based on the central core question about our young people, and that is, how are the young people, the children in our community? The reason we ask that question each Wednesday is that we know that when our children are cared for, and that they're well, that our society is well. So this morning, we have three students from the Naya Family Center, which is an organization that provides educational services, cultural arts, and direct support to reduce poverty in the Portland area's American Indian and Alaskan Native community. So with that, I'll have Kateri, Michael, and Black Bear please come forward. All these are students in the in Naya's Early College Academy. Thank you for being here, and whoever wants to start, please go ahead, and please introduce yourself by name when you speak.
Hi, my name is Michael Martini, and I wanted to talk about the idea of having people who ride bikes in the streets have a bike license. Because I was just thinking about it a while when I noticed there was just some jerk riding the bike and just not really following the rules and just following, like, running through stop signs and not really paying attention. And I thought the idea of a bike license would be a good idea because they're not the only ones, or people who drive cars aren't the only ones who ride or use the roads. So I thought that they should have to have a license because they use the road too. And yeah.
Good. Thank you. Thank you, Michael.
I'm Kateri Eaglestaff, and I wanted to talk about there has been some rumors going on about the police station closing down by St. John's. And when people heard that, the crime rate went up a little bit, and there was a couple drive-bys by my house in the last month, and I don't really think that the police station should close down.
And it won't be closing.
Okay.
So please tell all your friends and the folks who told you that. Okay, thank you. Is that it?
Yes.
Thank you, Kateri.
Hello, my name is Black Bear. I would like to bring up the issue of racial profiling on transit, MAX, and bus stops, and about, like, how, like, the officers, not all of them, but some of them, I don't really want to point out anybody, but some officers will, like, walk past, like, people of a certain race and just walk straight towards somebody else and, like, ask them for a ticket or something. And then if they don't have it, then they'll, like, yank them off the MAX or something. But if, like, at one time, though, they would ask somebody for a ticket and that they didn't have one, they'd be like, oh, that's okay. And then they'll just, like, walk away. And I wanted to bring that issue up. Like, maybe somebody could do something about it, because I try to state my position, like, to them, and they say my word don't matter. And maybe if I said something to somebody whose word did matter, then they could do something about it.
Well, actually, Black Bear, your word does matter. And I will talk to the police chief about that. All of you folks are involved in the Early College Academy. What does that do for you?
It helps us. They'll give us classes at PCC, and that will better prepare us for college. And I'm currently in one of those classes, and they teach us a lot. We get to meet the dean of students, and they'll tell us how bad plagiarism is and how important school is, and and how hard it is the more you get older, mm-hmm. the more you don't want to go to school and finish.
And being in a school with a low population of students, it provides more of a one-on-one attention with the teachers. And also, the school has a perspective from my own, like, ethnicity background. Like, it teaches from the side. Like, in our U.S. history class, it has a different way of teaching us about what happened in the past because it teaches us from, like, what really happened and from a perspective of the Native American size or Native American viewpoint. Mm-hmm. And I really appreciate it when they do that.
Good. Well, I want to thank you folks for being here this morning. And could we give these young folks a hand for their good work? Thank you. Thank you very much. I was out visiting their school on Monday, and it's an excellent program, and they do—they have great results with young people, and it really places the young people in a much better position to succeed at college because they're actually getting in high school college credits. So it's very, very helpful to them and gives them sort of a leg up and perhaps even more incentive to continue their higher education. Turn the next part over to Commissioner Salzman.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I would like to recognize a delegation from Dublin who is visiting our city today. And this delegation is on their way to San Francisco to celebrate St. Patrick's Day. I guess San Francisco is their sister city. They stopped here in Portland to learn more about our ongoing efforts around urban planning, transportation, and sustainable development. So I'd like to recognize John Tierney, the city manager of Dublin, and Dick Gleason, the managing director for Dublin Planning. If you gentlemen could come forward. We thank you for taking time to visit our city.
Do you want to do that now?
Did you have any comments you wanted to share with us?
Or? Just to say we're delighted to have been invited to your city council meeting. It's very different to what we have at home. We have 52 members in our city council. It doesn't operate quite like this. As you said, we're here to learn about your city. We've heard a lot about it in terms of the progressive way it's dealing with things like sustainability and so on. And I think we have found from our discussions to date that the problems of cities are common problems, be it in relation to housing, be it in relation to transportation, the whole sustainability issue and so on. And we have a very interesting program while we're here today and tomorrow, and we look forward to exchanging ideas about our two cities, two fine cities. We're on the western part of Europe, you're on the western part of America, so we have some of the peripherality issues to discuss as well. So thank you very much for having us at your meeting.
Well, thank you, folks. We hope you enjoy your time here. And anything that you need from us, please let us know.
We had Commissioner Saltzman invited me over this morning. We had a nice discussion about some of our land use policies in Oregon, and I was discussing the phenomena of NIMBY, not in my backyard. And you had another term, banana.
Build absolutely nothing anywhere near anything.
So I think that's a new term for our vocabulary. It was great to meet with you.
Thank you very much.
And welcome and thank you.
Okay.
Thank you. City Council will come to order. Carla, please call the roll.
Adams. Leonard.
Here.
Saltzman?
Here.
Sten?
Here.
Potter?
Aye. Here. I would like to remind folks that prior to offering public testimony to City Council, a lobbyist must declare which lobbying entity they are authorized to represent. Please read the communication.
Item 291, request of Pavel Goberman to address Council regarding KGW-TV Channel 8.
Thank you for being here this morning. When you speak, state your name for the record, and you have 3 minutes.
Okay. Hello, my name is Pavel Boiberman. I live in Beaverton, but my complaint against business in Portland area, KGW Channel 8. First, I would like to say, last August, I spoke before City Council, and my complaint was against Oregonian. I asked it suspend business license because it's business does not in good faith, and you did nothing. Oregonian still continue discrimination, all promote bribery, corruption in government. You know, I'm official candidate for United States Senator. In many organizations, I guess Gordon Smith, in many organizations invited all candidates, include me. But now TV Channel 8 refuses to invite me. Why? They said I'm not serious candidate. Why? Because I don't accept money from nobody. Jeff Merkley and Steve Novick invested in media about $2 million. All money, money, money. There is not need money for election. People don't know public broadcast service, include Oregon public broadcast, received from federal government $463 million each year. It is paid, therefore don't need extra money. Why media created all this political prostitution? Because all money go to the media. It's not only sway. Channel 8 violate Constitution United States and Code of Ethics for the Federal Communication Commission, United States Code Title 47, Section 315, Equal Time Law. I'm asking City of Council to suspend business license from TV Channel 8. I hope you will support Constitution United States. Also, some complaint against City Club of Portland on my many demands to organize debate forum of candidates for U.S. Senate. They don't want. City of Eugene does very good job. They invited all candidates on March 7th will be debate. Thank you. If you have any question, please welcome, ask me. Do you have any question?
This isn't a time for questions, sir. Just for your statement. So okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Folks, we don't clap in City Council. If you wish your sole support, raise your hand and you can waive that. But no outward displays. Thank you. Move to the consent agenda. I would like to pull item 295 on the Human Relations Commission back to the mayor's office, and it'll be resubmitted to council in a few weeks. Anything else the commissioners wish to pull from the consent agenda? Is any item anybody in this room wishes to pull from the consent agenda? Okay. Please call the vote.
Leonard?
Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Sten?
Aye.
Potter?
Aye. Please read the 9:30 time, sir.
Item 292, approve the Enterprise Zone policy and authorize the Portland Development Commission on behalf of the city to act as the E-Zone manager and apply for a 10-year E-Zone designation from the state of Oregon.
Aaron, Seth?
Good morning, Commissioners, Mayor. I'm Erin Flynn, Economic Development Director at the Portland Development Commission. And Seth and I appreciate the opportunity to be here this morning to present to you the new improved Enterprise Zone. We've been working on it for the past year to streamline the program. And what I wanted to do briefly before I turn it over to Seth is just communicate to you really the importance of the Enterprise Zone in our overall economic development strategy. I've had the opportunity to share with most of you the new economic development strategy for the city moving forward. And as we've discussed, at the heart of that strategy, we've really separated out our focus on traded sector companies from our focus on community economic development in order to be more deliberate and strategic in our approach to economic development in the city. The Enterprise Zone is an absolutely critical tool to support our traded sector companies. And the traded sector really is the heart of our economic development strategy because it focuses on those companies that provide products and services outside the region, thereby bringing wealth into the region and creating economic growth and job creation. The E-Zone is the single largest incentive that the City of Portland has at its disposal to both recruit and expand traded sector companies. To date, the E-Zone has accommodated 34 companies for a private sector investment of $435 million and 4,600 jobs. The city, in return, has provided a $27 million tax abatement. So companies receive a tax abatement on all new investment for a five-year period. So it's a short-term incentive for a long-term gain. I also want to just illustrate how the Enterprise Zone really supports our target industry approach. And I want to provide two examples of companies that we've been able to recruit in the past year using the Enterprise Zone. Both companies are in sustainable industries. First, we were able to recruit the solar company Soleix. Soleix manufactures ingots and wafers used to make solar panels. The company invested $52 million private investment, and has created 100 high-paying jobs. We also last year recruited SIC Processing, which is a company that recycles waste product from the manufacture of silicon. This company invested $8 million and created 20 new private sector jobs. So just to reiterate, this is a really critical tool for us in our economic development strategy. We hope you'll support the reauthorization. And now I'm going to turn it over to Seth Hudson, who has done really a remarkable job of putting together, I think, a very effective program. So thank you, Seth.
Thanks, Erin. I'm Seth Hudson, Economic Development Department, PDC. I'm going to run through kind of the overall Enterprise Zone program and hit some of the local requirements really quickly for you. So basically, the Enterprise Zone program, it's a state economic development program that local jurisdictions apply for to have the ability to then rebate those taxes. It's a competitive process. This year, there are 12 slots and about 14 communities applying for those 12 designations. Basically, the program is a five-year, 100% property tax abatement on all new investments at a site. It's focused on business-to-business operations, predominantly industrial. The thing to point out here is the abatement occurs after the investments have been made. So that allows us to do a check and balance to be sure that before a company gets their abatement, they've actually met the criteria of the program. The other thing I want to point out is that once the Enterprise Zone has been set up and we've set up our local criteria, it's an as of right. So if a company meets those local requirements, they get the abatement. This is a quick map of the proposed Enterprise Zone boundaries. Everything in this kind of light yellow is in the zone. This is all land in this area that's zoned industrial or employment. You'll notice some gaps up along the Columbia River, which is up at the top part of your image. Those are either open space or large commercial zoned areas or terminals related to the port. Here's another image for you that kind of shows the same thing. Here you can see the terminals of the port, the airport, and some of the rail infrastructure. So the objective of the Enterprise Zone policy, which is the document you have in front of you today, is to attract new investment through the expansion or attraction of operations to Portland. One of our significant changes we've made this year over previous Enterprise Zone applications is we are trying to strengthen the link between Portland residents earning at or below 80% MFI, median family income, with the jobs being created by the companies that are getting the abatement. I'm going to get into a little more detail in the next couple of slides. We also are encouraging local business-to-business purchases, and we want to ensure that firms are increasing their overall employment. So quickly into the local requirements. One of the major changes that's happened through state law is all firms now enter into what's called a first source hiring agreement for all positions. So when they applied to PDC for the enterprise zone abatement, they fill out a first source agreement that states the jobs they're going to create, the skills they're looking for, when they plan on hiring those positions. That information is fed through the work source system to find eligible candidates to fill those positions. There's also the requirement to meet a minimum employment goal of 110% the first year, state requirement. Full-time jobs must meet minimum quality levels. We have requirements that benefits have to meet national averages, and we check that every year. We also have a requirement that salaries have to be 150% above Oregon's minimum wage. We also have a new hire job retention requirement. Once a employee has been hired and they've made it through the company's probation period, we want to be sure that 50% of those new hires are still there at the company 2 years later. So in other words, they're not hiring a bunch of folks to get the abatement and laying them all off. And the final significant change that we made to the program is this: companies will pay 15% of their abatement into a new fund called the Workforce Training and Business Development Fund. That fund, which I'll get into in a second, ties back to the First Source Agreement and allows us to work with WorkSource, Oregon, the Portland Metro Office, WSI, et cetera, to actually specialize training for those citizens of Portland looking for jobs for the jobs being created by the companies. Other requirements: they have to have enter into a business procurement plan. It's a 5% goal every year to try to purchase goods locally. We have a website that lists all the companies within the zone, and we work with companies on an annual basis to make sure they're trying to purchase as much as they can locally to increase that money multiplier effect throughout the community. That trickles down and helps the smaller companies in the city. Businesses also must meet the business and workforce equity requirements. That is the city's workforce training program relating to traded industries such as in construction trade for apprenticeships. It also ties into PDC's minority women emerging small business requirements. And we also have a requirement that the companies are EEO certified. The next requirement is we make sure that although a company's taxes are being abated, they are still paying through other fees to the city enough money to cover the city's basic cost of services, police and fire, for example. And we do that at a 30% number. So when the city abates a dollar of taxes, 40% of that comes to the city, about 30% of that of the general budget goes to police and fire type services. So we make sure that occurs. The point of that is to make sure that a new building that gets built has the infrastructure in terms of police and fire services that are needed in case something happens. Finally, the last major requirement we have is for those projects that get over $2 million in tax exemption, they are required to provide child care and transit passes to their employees. Sliding scale, depending on how many children, et cetera, but we have it all laid out in the policy. So the other thing we've added to the agreement, the policy, is a couple of things. We've instituted an Enterprise Zone Advisory Committee, which has never been in place before. This committee will meet quarterly. The Enterprise Zone Manager, myself, and some other staff will be working with this advisory committee to check in on the program. They will be making recommendations to any changes that might need to occur over the 10-year period to get back to PDC and City Council as needed. We've also instituted a technical advisory committee made up of representatives from Work Systems, the county, DHCD, anybody that might be tied into or have need to be involved with the programs related to the Enterprise Zone. And then the only thing we put in is a final annual report every year to City Council and PDC on the success of the program. So really quickly, what we've done so far, we've got the Port of Portland approval on February 13th as required by law. We had the taxing entity meeting as required by law on February 22nd. The only people that showed up to that was the president of PCC, who supports the program, and the county. And you should have a letter in front of you from the chair of Multnomah County supporting the program. PDC approved this on February 27th, and now we're in front of you today. The application is due to the state on April 1st, and we should receive the designation by July 1st to start up again for another 10 years. And I just wanted to take a quick minute and thank a couple of folks that have worked with us. We created an ad hoc committee about a year ago that was had representatives from the community in North Northeast Portland. It had people from WSI, WorkSource Oregon, BHCD, and they've spent many hours early in the morning from 7 to 9 o'clock meeting, going through all the requirements. I should point out, state law on enterprise zone is 66 pages. The rules around it are 182 pages, and our policy is only 19. So we've done a good job of streamlining. We also had a lot of stakeholder meetings as well. And I am joined by some members in the audience here if you've got questions around some of the workforce issues as well. And then finally, we've got two companies who would like to speak really quickly on the Enterprise Zone program. We have a representative from Service Steel, which is a small manufacturing company on Swan Island, and we also have a representative from Soleix, the solar company that Aaron referred to a second ago. So if it's okay, I'd like to call them up, if that's all right.
Go ahead, Seth.
Want to come up, Rowan?
Thanks for being here. When you speak, would you state your name for the record, please?
My name is Rowan Hollitz. I'm the controller for Service Steel on Swan Island. We're a locally owned and operated steel distribution and processing company. 3 years ago, we were at a crossroads. We needed more room for our business to expand, and we were seriously considering moving across the river to Vancouver. We also needed financial assistance to purchase new machines to help us maintain our competitive edge in the steel processing business. In 2006, the Portland Development Commission, through the Enterprise Zone program, was able to provide us the tax incentives we needed to purchase two new state-of-the-art plasma cutting machines for $1.8 million. In exchange, we agreed to retain our existing 67 jobs in Portland and create seven additional jobs over the life of the agreement. At the state's Office of Economic Development, we found the assistance we needed to purchase our building so we could expand. 1 year later, we amended our Enterprise Zone application to add three laser cutting machines for $1.5 million to enable us to adequately service a new customer. This increased capacity has enabled us to attract the attention of several significant manufacturers of military vehicles with existing contracts. We anticipate they will keep us busy all this year and next. As of last month, we have added a total of 15 jobs, double our commitment in 2006. In the first 2 months of 2008, we have added another laser cutting machine and a milling machine to meet demand. In part because we are already in the Enterprise Zone program, we are seriously considering adding two more laser machines before mid-year to help us meet the additional demand for parts for military vehicles. Each of these machines require us to hire at least three more employees to operate them over three shifts. In 2008, this will probably result in an increase of at least 11 full-time jobs, each paying a significant wage. This program is like the proverbial pebble thrown into a pond. The ripples move outward and impact myriad other businesses beyond the initial participant. In our case, Oregon Steel Mills provides the raw material, which stays here rather than being shipped out of state for processing, at least our small portion of it. Next, Service Steel cuts the steel into the required parts, adding jobs to meet the increased demand. Then a local fabricating company, also in the Enterprise Zone, forms and welds the parts into subcomponents. This company has added 40 new welders to their payroll in the past few months to meet our customers' demand for welded parts. They also buy significantly more welding wire and other supplies from companies in the Enterprise Zone. Most of the subcomponents and several other parts go to yet another Enterprise Zone company to be painted. This painting company has recently hired 10 new positions to meet the increased demand. The scenario described above assists Oregon steel mills in closing more sales, in part because their customer can save 30% on the cost of shipping raw steel by having parts manufactured here and the lighter parts shipped. They also sell the convenience of one-stop shopping to their customers who can order steel and receive finished parts. I believe the Enterprise Zone program is a benefit to the entire community. The tax incentives help keep the jobs in the area and add jobs. The ripple effect helps maintain and add jobs at companies downstream. The positive impact of the metropolitan area on the metropolitan area of all the additional payroll has to be significant. Finally, I'd like to thank the very helpful and knowledgeable staff at PDC who educated us and guided us through the intricacies of the application and renewal process, in particular Seth Hudson and E-Zone Project Coordinator Sierra Gardner have helped us immeasurably. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And then we also have Doug Moore with Solex. Thanks, Ron.
Commissioners, Mr. Mayor, thank you for the opportunity to come here today. My name is Doug Moore. I'm the plant manager with Soleix. As Seth mentioned, we're a manufacturer of products that go into solar panels, new to the Portland area. Soleix is currently in the Enterprise Zone agreement right now. We moved into the Rivergate area in June of 2007. We began an extensive search for location for expansion of our company starting about 3 years ago, when we've been working with Erin Flynn and her organization, Seth Hudson, and Colin Sears for nearly 3 years. We looked extensively from Vancouver to Salem, Forest Grove, out to Gresham before finally settling in our current location out in the Rivergate area. Our startup in June has gone very well. We're currently looking at total investments here in Portland of $48 million for our first factory that we began construction on. We're looking at about a total of 110 jobs in the Portland area. The Portland facility, as I mentioned, is our first commercial expansion for Soleix. Looking at the market data for the solar industry, we're expecting significant growth to continue. If our startup goes very well here, we would expect to expand our operations beyond just the Rivergate facility. Certainly, if that happens and the interzone option is available to Soleix, that would we'd certainly take that into account for any kind of future expansion of the company. In closing, the Enterprise Zone was definitely a factor for Soleix choosing Portland as our first commercial expansion, and any future expansions, we would look at that as one of the factors for choosing our next location.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you. That's the end of the presentation, where you can answer questions if you have any.
Questions from the commissioners? Thank you. Do you have a sign-up sheet?
We did, and no one else signed up.
Just one question. Seth, so you mentioned there's like 14 jurisdictions applying for some 12 designations. Is that what you said?
Yes.
Okay.
Yep.
Our track record.
It's a competitive process, so the state's going to rank our applications with everybody else.
Is there anyone here who wishes to testify to this matter? Please call the vote.
Leonard?
Well, I'm pleased that I had a hand actually in passing this legislation in the legislature, and I'm very pleased with how it's being used here in the city and specifically by the PDC. This is an example of PDC's highest and best work. Using all the tools that are available to attract great businesses that provide great jobs. And I have a lot of confidence and faith in the future of economic development with the addition of Aaron and the able work of Seth. In that department, Commissioner Sten and I have just had the opportunity to, I think we can safely say, in great detail, go through the budget of PDC. And I think it was a great experience for the organization. It certainly was for me. And this is the area that I feel most confident about. And really appreciate the testimony, the good work, and I'm happy to support this. Aye.
Saltzman?
Yeah, me too. It's a great program. That's a very impressive array of companies that have chosen to take advantage of the Enterprise Zone. Appreciate Soldex and Steel Service Steel being here today to share your experience firsthand. But this is really it's a great program. So I'm pleased to support it and hope we continue our track record of success in getting the designation. Aye.
Sten.
Thanks to Seth and Aaron and the community partners. This will, I think, be the first time I've actually enthusiastically voted for an Enterprise Zone program. I have voted against them several times, and I think may have voted once just to kind of help get it through, even then, and then grumbled about it. This is a poorly thought out program at the state level. It's very, very vague and has almost no. No offense to Leonard, who voted for it. I didn't mean that. he was fighting to not have that happen, but it doesn't require enough. And so in the early stages of this, maybe 10 years ago, it literally said you can get the tax break if you hire, I think it was 20% of your workforce from the area where moderate income people live. And as I did the math, I couldn't figure out how you could hire less than that from that area. You're not going to hire your workforce from Dunthorpe if you're hiring for lower skill, lower wage jobs. And so, but the idea that something needed to happen, a partnership with the businesses and the workers, and the fact that we have heavily underemployed people out there who need these opportunities, and I think everybody knows the potential hole in Portland's, you know, wonderful quality of life is not enough good jobs. That's just a fact. Meant that we really should try and put this together. I think Seth has gone out with Aaron's leadership and put together a program that makes sense. We have asked way more of the companies who you can see are enthusiastic about doing the right thing than the minimum requirement. And I think this is indicative of what I believe is now kind of a revitalized and robust economic development strategy. This is a cornerstone in it that Aaron is leading. And so I think that at least the recommendation the mayor will get from Commissioner Leonard and our team will be to fund most of these things. And that's it. That's a sea change. And it's not because I think suddenly Commissioner Leonard and I have changed our mind and have decided that we like economic development. It's that these programs now make sense. And economic development to me is one of the most dangerous of government programs, because you don't ever really know for sure if you're changing the marketplace. You know, are you giving the company something they don't really need, or are you giving them something that's going to make the difference? And although you can never be certain, I think we have to push in this direction, and you've brought us a program that I can support. So a little long-winded, Mayor, I apologize, but I've had a long, many years railing against these, and it's a great pleasure to support one. Aye.
Otter.
Well, thank you, PDC. This is new and improved, and it's great. And I love the partnerships with the community and workforce and all the other groups that provide assistance to low-income people to pull themselves up by their own labor. So thank you for doing that. And I had a chance to visit a couple of the companies out in Enterprise Zone and found that they really were committed to trying to provide those jobs to the family wage jobs to their employees. And of course, I think the Portland area is becoming known for its sustainable industries, and this is certainly one of those, SOLIAC. So anyway, thank you all for doing what you do. I vote aye.
Thanks.
Please read the 10 p.m. time certain.
Item 293, adopt budget adjustment recommendations and the minor supplemental budget for the fiscal year 2007-08 winter budget adjustment process and make budget adjustments in various funds.
Casey.
Good morning, Mr. Mayor, members of council. I'm here to discuss the winter budget adjustment. As you know, we changed some of the processes for this year's budget monitoring and next year's budget process when we established the process.
We all know who you are, the people watching you at home.
Oh, I'm sorry, Commissioner Leonard. I'm Casey Short, the financial planning manager. I usually do that. Just got carried away. Anyway, unusual for our process is we're not having a winter bump, a formal budget monitoring process this year in order to facilitate the budget preparation and EBS implementation. But it became clear to financial planning that some of the bureaus did need budget adjustments sooner than the end of the year in the normal spring bump process. So we made available this opportunity for bureaus to do that. We also have two funds in the major supplemental budget, which is up the next item. What we have is pretty limited in this adjustment in the general fund. There are six funds affected in the general fund. The biggest item is transfer from contingency set aside for encumbrances for $1,677,000 for the Bureau of Housing and Community Development, which didn't request these in encumbrance in the fall bump, which is normal, but so they're requesting it now. And there is also the one item that's a request for a draw on contingency, $55,000 to the cable office to continue work on the fiber to the household project following the council's work session in November. There are a few other items, just transferring money between categories in the general fund. Transportation fund has $1.98 million in requests. The largest of these, $1.7 million, is to recognize bond proceeds for a different way of funding their LED traffic signal replacement project. There should be no change in net outgo for this because they're already paying for it. They're just doing a different method of financing. And they're also recognizing $280,000 from the sewer system operating fund to help Green Streets in budgeting that expenditure. Sewer system is sending that $280,000 to them. There's a minor item in the general reserve fund. There is in that fund set aside a little piece for for the health insurance fund, and there are two funding sources there to pay for blood screening and physical activity programs. This affects the health insurance fund, and finally the printing and distribution fund increases $475,000 for work they will be doing for OSD for the Portland Recycles program, which is the subject of the major supplemental. Next item. If there are any questions, I'd be happy to take them.
Questions? Thank you, Casey. Is there anyone signed up to testify on this matter?
No one signed up.
Is there anyone here who wishes to testify to this matter? It's an emergency call to vote.
Leonard?
Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Stinn?
Aye.
Potter?
Aye. Issued item 294.
Adopt the fiscal year 2007-08 winter major supplemental budget and make budget amendments in two funds.
Casey Short, financial planning manager again. There are two funds in the major supplemental budget. As you know, a major supplemental budget is required by state law if you're increasing appropriations by more than 10% or taking 15% or more from the fund's contingency. There are two funds here. The Solid Waste Management Fund is requesting $600,000 from its contingency to pay for outreach and marketing for the Portland Recycles program this fiscal year. And the Spectator Facilities Operating Fund, $1.4 million from contingency for improvements to PGE Park. The largest of these is replacement of the turf, and there are also some roof work on the roof, putting in solar panels. We've had our hearing with Tax Supervising and Conservation Commission last week, and they approved this. That's all I've got.
Questions?
Did you say the $1.4 million is from the Spectator Fund contingency?
Yes. Okay. It's its own fund's contingency.
Right. Okay.
Other questions? Is there anyone signed up to testify on this matter?
No one signed up.
Is there anyone here who wishes to testify to this matter? It's emergency call to vote.
Leonard?
Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Stinn?
Aye.
Potter?
Aye.
Thank you.
Thank you. Move to the regular agenda. Please read item 307.
Release $200,000 in grant funds to Voss Workers' Rights Education Project to operate a day labor hire site in Portland as approved by council.
I'm pleased to bring this item to council today. When the council unanimously agreed to fund a hire site for all Portland workers, I believe we are making an investment not only in people, but in the livability and economic prosperity of our entire city. With this simple solution, we're beginning to solve long-term problems. First, neighborhood businesses will benefit from no longer having workers congregate on streets near their businesses or impeding traffic that keeps their customers away. Second, a monitored day site gives law enforcement and community members the ability to separate those who prey on day laborers from those who are earnestly seeking work. Third, many communities support a higher site because a safe and sanitary site will ease traffic congestion in areas laborers currently congregate, will improve the livability of their communities. Fourth, this site provides a dry, warm, safe, sanitary, and humane place to workers who offer a much-needed service to employers. The wages paid to day laborers diminish their need to tap social service networks and, more importantly, keeps families intact. Indeed, this site is one more cog in Portland's program to end homelessness and ensure that people are off the streets. It embodies a concern and compassion that Portlanders feel for each other. And to quote the Eastside Industrial Council in their letter of support, because of the irregular and strenuous nature of their work, unsafe working conditions, and unscrupulous employers, day laborers are among the most economically vulnerable groups of workers in our community. I agree. And this site, this council has approved, will make these workers much less vulnerable in the future. A wide spectrum of community groups have been working on finding a solution to the day labor problem for over 10 years. I've remained supportive of this project and commend those in the community who've put their differences aside to work together and find a common solution. We're going to hear from some city employees first who will update the council on the development of this grant agreement, and then we will have some folks to testify. First, Kevin Easton from my office, who's been leading up this agreement from this mayor's office, also Jonathan Cullen and Judith Mowry.
Thank you, Mayor and Commissioners. My name is Kevin Easton. I'm a small business policy manager in Mayor Tom Potter's office and working with a group of community members over the last 12 months on this project, many who are here today that you'll hear from later. I just wanted to take a moment to talk about the grant agreement that's in front of you and how it came about. In November of 2006, City Council unanimously approved the $200,000 funds as part of the Street Access for Everyone package for the day labor hire site. Since that time, the funds have been rolled over while community stakeholder group was assembled to come up with criteria to select the best nonprofit organization to manage and operate the hire site. As the mayor mentioned, it's also a part of the City of Portland and Multnomah County's 10-year plan to end homelessness. Last June, using the mayor's economic development funds, the mayor's office hired Jonathan Cologne to coordinate assembling stakeholders and guide us through the siting process, and he'll talk more about that in just a moment. Extensive efforts were conducted over a six-month period to establish agreed-upon criteria for the request for proposal. Starting in June of 2007, one-on-one meetings, assessments, and focus groups were completed with community stakeholders gaining their input and feedback on qualifications and criteria for who should be awarded this grant. A stakeholder group of 37 self-identified stakeholders was formed and met regularly to discuss this. And again, Jonathan will go into more detail in just a moment. We also consulted with Pablo Alvarado of the National Day Labor Organizing Network about best practices learned from the development of day labor hire sites in over 60 other U.S. cities. The project team also visited the day labor hire site in Seattle, operated by nonprofit Casa Latina, that has been successfully operating in Seattle's Belltown district, to see firsthand how the site would operate and observe positive impacts to the neighborhood. In order to ensure broad notification and participation, on October 8, 2007, the Office of the Mayor proceeded with a formal grant RFP process to award grant monies for managing and operating a day labor hire site. The grant RFP was posted on the Bureau of Purchases website and sent to participating stakeholders at the time, as well as minority contracting organizations. The mayor's office received one proposal from VOS, who organized wide community support to support their proposal and get behind their proposal. An independent grant review panel scrutinized VOS's 39-page proposal and exercised their right to hold an interview with VOS to further clarify their written proposal. We wanted to make sure that we gave a lot of scrutiny, even though we did have just one proposal. The panel found that VOAS adequately met the following criteria: management of day-to-day operations of a day labor hire site, including intake of day laborers and employers, job placement, and all other activities related to managing, operating the day labor hire site, a demonstrated ability and history of working with day laborers, an understanding of labor and workforce issues, bilingual and bicultural skills with demonstrated ability to speak, read, and write in English and in Spanish, ability to maintain effective working relationships with local businesses, local neighborhood associations, local residents, local police, day laborers, employers, community organizations, and labor unions in order to promote civic harmony and community participation in an effective day labor hire site. The committee also found that they had the ability to acquire, negotiate, and maintain a lease of a facility or a location that will serve as the day labor hire site. They have the ability to raise funds for programs and projects, the ability to plan, implement, and evaluate long-term program goals and strategies, and the ability to track data and report on program results and outcomes. In their proposal, VOAS supplied signed letters of support from several diverse organizations, demonstrating the ability to work collaboratively with other resources, and those letters are attached. On December 18, 2007, the mayor's office issued a notice of intent to award grant, which was sent to participating stakeholders and was posted on the Bureau of Purchases website. And real quickly, some key provisions of the grant agreement include that this is a one-time seed money grant for startup expenses and approximately 1 year of operational expenses. VOAS will be running the site, not the City of Portland. St. Francis Church will be the fiscal agent for VOAS. VOAS, and not the City of Portland, will sign a lease with the Portland Development Commission. PDC will then maintain ownership of the property. VOAS will be required to report statistical data to the city monthly so the city can evaluate the effectiveness of the hire site. The hire site will be open from 6 a.m. to 12 noon every weekday and open on Saturday mornings for an agreed-upon time depending on seasonal needs. This grant agreement requires VOAS to immediately begin the process and in 4 months either execute or make reasonable progress towards executing a good neighbor agreement. This grant agreement does not require any neighbor or third party to enter into the good neighbor agreement. It just requires VOAS. This grant agreement divides payment into two parts: $100,000 immediately for startup costs pursuant to terms detailed in the grant agreement, and the second $100,000 on or near June 28, 2008, upon review that grantee has adequately performed its obligations of the grant agreement and pursuant to the terms of the grant agreement. At this point, I'd like to introduce Jonathan Cologne, who will talk about siting and also our community outreach in phase one of this project, which is really before a site was identified.
Good morning, commissioners. My name is Jonathan Colon. I'm with Montesian Associates, a small consulting firm here locally. So I'll walk through the timeline. We started this in June, and we had the National Day Labor organization out and gave us some of the best practice that they had collected over the around the country, including Seattle, which was considered one of the best programs in the country. So we were fortunate that we had something that we can relate to that's quite near. So one of the things that there are two sites, one is on 6th and Ankeny, and the other site is on Lloyd and MLK. So we had to make a decision on where we began. So we began on the 6th and Ankeny site because it was the oldest site and had the largest highest number of day laborers in that area. So on the 6th and Ankeny site, we began meeting with business owners around the 6th and Ankeny site. We began meeting with individual day workers to sort of identify what issues they were facing and what needs so that we can begin having a dialogue and creating a conversation. We spent the end of June and July doing this. In August, we had created enough self-identified participants to start beginning the focus groups. We held three focus groups. Two of them were at the Jupiter Hotel, which is literally two blocks away from the 6th and Ankeny site. And one is a little bit higher up on the Old Wives Tale, which is on Burnside and Sandy. The purpose of the focus groups were to sort of get feedbacks from the stakeholders about what the needs were and some of the criteria necessary to have a successful sort of hire site. We looked at considerations, we looked at criteria, and we also worked along with the best practices to sort of come up with some minimal criteria about the hiring site. So there were four focus groups topics. One was the consideration of minimal area so that it could allowed us to gauge how much physical space we needed, what kind of activities needed to happen so that we can gauge the physical manifestation of our site. We looked at what physical accommodations needed to be included, such as an office or bathrooms, shelter, so that it also gave us some parameters around how we were going to weight the different properties. Accessibility, and then the minimal neighborhood impact was, we thought it was a very important criteria to look at and get some feedback, both from the day labor hire, the day laborers themselves, as well as the business owners and neighbors from the 69 Kinney site. These are the minimal criteria that we came up with, and I'll go through it very quickly. We often got the statement to build it right the first time. It was important to be near traffic lights or intersections. Had to be visible to employers. One of the most important things were to have a separation between pedestrians, the day laborers, and traffic. Ideally, a circular drive. It was important to be able to bike to the site. It was important to have a long-term solution. Bathrooms, when we asked a question about bathrooms, so we can think about size, a unisex bathroom seems to be the So the unisex bathroom sort of became the winning or sort of like the choice. Trash dumpers, there was an important thing about being able to clean and being able to be in a clean place. And they actually asked for garbage cans. They wanted to be able to clean around where they were. They wanted to be able to have a place to dispose their bottled waters, anything that they ate. Again, the separation of traffic flow, sufficient lighting for safety. It needed to fit in the neighborhood, and we go on and on and on. Max access, freeway access. And we go through the rest of these. So these are sort of the minimal criteria that then we then go went out and look at the available inventory of real estate in the area and sort of matched it to this minimal criteria. After going through the initial phase where we looked at about 17 for sale sites and I think it was like 13 for lease sites, we came down to 7 that sites that sort of fit or work with, and then we ended up coming to this one, the MLK and Everett site, so the 240 Northeast MLK. And there are a lot of reasons around this particular site, and it sort of meets a lot of those criteria that we've looked at. So this is what it actually looks like, so that you're geographically pointed. It's 2 blocks away. From the convention center, three city blocks or 6 face blocks away from the 6th and Ankeny site.
All right. And so as far as timeline, this was, we brought these sites to the stakeholder committee that was assembled at the time in October. And the site at MLK and Everett gained consensus among that group that would be our ideal location of what was available. So at that point, we initiated conversations with PDC, the landowner, about the possibility of siting it there. And that took a few weeks. Once that was determined that this could work, we met with PDC and preliminarily looked at what a lease agreement would look like. Upon doing that, we started phase two of really our outreach, is now that we had a target site in mind to contact the